Columbia Morning on KFRU, and we're joined by Columbia City Manager Mike Mathis. Appreciate his time today. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Great.
Last time you were here, it seems like it really has gone fast in between the two visits, and I appreciate you coming back. We kind of talked about, and I think it was the first time that I had heard it out in public, was that the recommendation was to move forward with a sports field house at Phillips Park and end, for the time being, any conversation about putting a sports field house at Central Missouri Event Center or the old fairgrounds. That has been done. City Council unanimously jumped on board with that from the city staff. So what's happening now?
Well, we'll move forward. We'll release an RFP, a bid, and we'll see how much we can afford to build down there. So I expect that'll move forward pretty quickly. Our hope is to turn ground as soon as possible.
Will that, but it will not be ready by this fall, probably, will it?
No, we're hoping for spring.
So is there anything else in the aftermath of that? After that was what the city said, we would recommend doing this after the council. How does it feel? How does that decision feel?
Well, you know, we have a 9-step approval process to build anything. And so it always feels good to reach the end of the process, you know, where you're, okay, it's time to build it. And in this case, though, Fred Perry and the county commission had a great idea. It's a tremendous concept. It just wasn't ready for prime time at this point, and we were at step 9 of 9. So I know that we'll be talking more about the future of the fairgrounds, and this particular deal just isn't going to be it.
Future of the fairgrounds. Do you have an idea of what you would say in your opinion would be a good use of the fairgrounds property and how that might unfold?
There's probably 10 ways that could be brilliantly used. So it's really about how we all come together and move forward. I think there's a vision there that's come up pretty frequently with the Victus report that we produced. And frankly, I think about 10 different plans the county's done over time. I think most people are focusing on a future of sports and using that as a regional draw, even a national draw as a sports facility. It is the perfect location for that, and it would put a big shot in the arm for the economy on the north side.
Is the fairgrounds or the old fairgrounds, what we're talking about right now, is that city, in the city boundaries, in the city?
It's surrounded by city limits, but it is not.
And so that is kind of like a spot that's there. I mean, because the county bought that, so the county owns that property. And do you talk annexation talks?
Sure. That was part of the discussion that we'd come to, and the county had agreed on that one point. That, of course, you know, if the city's going to own it, it really ought to be inside the city. That's not always the case. For a long time, if you remember, the Lake of the Woods golf course was outside of the city. It is inside the city now, and I won't hold my breath, but someday the airport might be inside the city limit. So it's not unheard of to own land outside of the city.
But Ashland has extended its city limits down there. Mm-hmm. So it's right. It doesn't surround the airport, does it, Ashland?
No, but it does touch on
a couple of sides, I thought. Yeah. City Manager Mike Mathis is with us. You can join us at 442-8255. While we're talking about county city business, let's go to the Fire Protection District. Now, the Boone County Fire Protection District and the city have, I can remember for several years, negotiated off and on about how to cover emergency calls as the city expanded and talking annexation and grew and its city limits grew. Then sometimes the ability to cover certain areas didn't grow with that from the city fire department. Is that a fair statement?
To a certain degree, yeah. But you know, things change over time, and as the growth occurs, you know, you'll have district stations that are inside the city and serving. They have to leave the city to serve their client base, you know. So it gets awkward. So we always need to talk to each other and renew what does the map look like and where are we going to go automatically and where are you going to go automatically.
Persons who live any place, they just want to know that when they call 911 with an emergency, right, be it a medical emergency or a fire emergency, that somebody's going to respond. I mean, that's what people want.
That's right.
And so what is the issue? I mean, I understand. Is it territorial? Is it money? What's the issue? Issues, I should say.
Well, we've been told it's money. You know, I always take it from the point of view of a city resident. I'm biased that way, I guess. When you're in the city, you expect city fire service. For one, it's quantitatively or qualitatively better service. We require firefighter 1 and 2 certifications and EMT for all of our firefighters. That's not required in a volunteer service. We're there. We have equipment in the stations. There are people on the equipment waiting for the call. And that's not how you operate a volunteer service. So generally you have to wait for someone to get the call, then to go to the station, get the equipment, and then get to your location. And that's a very effective, very low-cost way to provide rural fire service. But as you urbanize, as the urban core grows, people expect a higher level of service. So the thing to point out is everyone inside the city limits gets city fire service. You're paying for it. You get it. And the idea that we would then also pay for volunteer service on top of that is hard for me to justify as a city manager.
When they're arguing from the other point of view as a fire protection district, they may argue, and I don't know, we need to have, I've heard some of this in a recent forum, but I guess the question is that if the city, again, has expanded through annexation, the city limits out, and then that kind of absorbs what you said, a district fire station, which has, as you just described, a different approach than what the city fire station does. But if the city fire station is farther away from somebody who needs the service than the volunteer station is, or than this fire protection district station is.
It's a great and common question. So the thing about the volunteer approach, it's not where the station is, it's where the volunteer is. And are they occupied with something they can't leave at the moment? So a volunteer approach, they don't always have the capacity to respond. In fact, that's one of the points of the differences, is they don't always respond. But we do, and it's because that's how we fund it, that's how we staff it. So it doesn't often take us longer to get to a place than, it depends on where the staff is, quite frankly.
So when now a 911 call comes in, and the person there who is going to dispatch a fire truck or fire personnel to a call, and they look at one of these areas, how do they decide? What's the process like?
Well, we have a map, and we give it to them, and we say, you know, if it's inside this line, you call us, you dispatch us. If it's outside that line, you dispatch the Boone County.
And that line is not always a city limit line. Is that correct right now?
Not always right now. There are little boxes, we call them run boxes, of geographic area that both are dispatched to. And so, quite frankly, that's not a very efficient approach. So we've had a letter from the district saying they're gonna stop that practice, and they're going to be available if we need them, and so we can call them and they'll respond. And we're vice versa. We'll come if they need us. And that happens normally. So it simplifies everything. It says if you're in the city will go first automatically. And it's actually helpful for 911. It's less confusing. Okay, now do I send them both, or is it, you know?
So they're not going to use the boxes anymore. And I think April 3rd is the date when this is, or early April is, my understanding is when this might be the new change.
And I should stress the scope of this change. It's very small, right? So the city responded 12,000 calls last year. We're talking about 166 of those, which we went to, right? So we go to all those calls. They also went to 166 of those 12,000 calls. So that's the scope we're talking about.
What is the purpose, in your opinion, of a Senate bill that Caleb Rowden is behind, which I think it was drawn up to kind of address these kinds of situations with a county and a city?
I think so. It's not ready, I don't think. It's not a great bill because, once again, it would have folks in the city paying twice but only getting one of the services. So it needs some work, and I look forward to working with everybody on that. I think there are better ways to approach it than that. That's really kind of, frankly, a head-in-the-sand approach about growth as well. Once you're in the city, you really want the city's fire service. Most of the property that annexes in, almost all of it, is farm ground that then becomes developed. So it's not paying a lot of taxes anyway to the district. It comes in, it gets developed, then it begins to. But the folks who buy those houses or who build businesses there, they want the red fire truck with the, with the three people on it. So that's really ought to be a decision they get to make, not the state, frankly.
So meaning that they get to make from asking them who they do. You're not saying ask them, let them make a decision as to who serves them.
Well, they do now. See, once you're in the city, you're paying the taxes and you get right. the fire service.
But if I'm in one of those boxes where I'm in a city limit, but right now I'm being, I mean, the call goes out to the county fire protection district and then the city responds also, you're not saying give them one or the other choice in that district?
No, the bill requires you to receive the volunteer service and pay for both. So it's an odd, it's not a well thought through bill, and it's nobody's fault. It's just they hadn't taken it from a.
It's not in the final stages yet.
It's not ready for prime time.
So what would you say to people then? And we'll move on from this topic after I give you a chance to. So people who are concerned about this do hear the stories that would say, well, after X date, county no longer is going to be responding to these calls that we have been responding to. What will you say to the hundred and or to the people who are in that area where that they do have the boxes right sure. now?
We're still coming, just like we always have.
All right.
Yeah, you call 911. We are coming.
Will you negotiate further with the county on this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're always, well, you know, all these disagreement points aside, we value those folks. They provide a tremendous service, really honor the work they do in the rural part of the county.
They're going to say, though, that they're due some kind of reimbursement for that. I mean, is that the issue? I mean, they're going to say, well, so what are you going to pay us for helping to supplement your fire protection?
Well, they've decided not to supplement fire protection. So, and I don't know what we would pay for. You know, they're not paying the volunteers. And the equipment's already paid for. Taxpayers already paid for it. So I don't know what expense they have, quite frankly. And that's the sort of thing we got to work out.
All right. We'll move from that to another. I don't think this is any less light, but it does touch upon something different and maybe lighter for some. The I'm going to go to sports for just a second.
Oh, good.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a question about sports. When the Missouri State High School Activities Association looked at the bids to keep basketball championships in Columbia or move it elsewhere, for the first time in a long time, they went to Springfield this year. Mm-hmm. What is the city's role and what will it be in the future to say to Misha, well, you know what? We'd sure like to get this back. I think the contract is maybe for the next 4 years or so, somewhere in 2022, maybe as through then, Springfield's got it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot in Columbia are saying, we don't like that. We'd like to see it back. So what's the city doing?
I'm with them.
Yeah. So what do they need? I've got partnerships with businesses? Or
yes, absolutely. And the community. So a good example. I mean, the reason Springfield got it is they were hungry for it, and they made a great bid, and it was better than ours. And I think, you know, because of our location, I think we got a little bit calm about our response, and we allow the CVB to do all the lifting and go make a bid, and we assumed it would come. But they outbid us. And so what we did after that, there was another round of bids for other events. We didn't rest on our laurels. We got everybody involved who cares about it. We've had the hotels have stepped up amazingly. So they contribute some room nights, and CVB contributes some cash. And then we have other businesses that will occasionally chip in. A lot of it is the university as well, who's a terrific partner about what venues they'll just allow for use, et cetera. So when we all come together and partner, nobody can beat us. And I think that played out last time where I think we got three of the five bids, you mm-hmm. know. And then two of the bids, they postpone. So we're hopeful on the rest of the two as well. But when basketball comes back up, our intent will be to make a deal that they can't refuse.
Again, City Manager Mike Mathis is our guest. Let's move on to something else that was at the end of the council meeting on Monday. We addressed this a couple of days ago with the mayor, and it was his request for a comprehensive crime reduction strategy. I like reports that give all kinds of strategies and suggestions. I think people also need to realize just because there is a suggestion does not mean that that will ever be an eventuality or reality. Would that be fair
that's
to say?
That's a fair thing. So we had three main points in our report. The first one was really just here's what we pay for now, which is a comprehensive strategy. And so we have prevention efforts. We have Go Solve the Crime efforts. And we spend about $23 million a year on that. So we wanted to cover, what are we buying now? And then we talked a little bit about the data. You know, what is crime doing? And we're at a 25-year low in crime, except for homicides, when it went up. And that was, I think, the source. That was the motive question the mayor was asking about the homicides. So we focused on the homicides in specific, each one. Who was involved? What do we know about it? And is it have we made an arrest? And then we moved into a phase of here are things, you know, the question was asked, what more could the city do? So there are eight things there that have been talked about before or other cities have done to try to prevent crimes from happening.
Did you like one of those or some of those?
Well, when you dig in and know the reasons behind them, they all have a compelling reason to talk about them. But no, I think most of them won't work here, either because they're way too expensive or we just don't like them, like curfews. You know, that fundamentally, we've talked about that in Columbia. We just don't like curfews here, and that's fair. That's the community's decision to make. The reason it comes up is that you'd be surprised how much property crime is caused by folks under 18, a large amount of it. And gangs, frankly, recruit from middle schools. So if you can keep them at home at night, the idea is this is a way to, you might see a reduction in some property crime, and the real goal is to keep middle schoolers out of gangs. Now, the tough part is, how do you prove that worked, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you prove something didn't happen? It's tough. So I get why people aren't excited about a curfew.
That would be one that would generate a whole lot of conversation. It has in the past, and it would again, because I think there have been certain circumstances where maybe a temporary one has been talked about, but if you're, I don't know of a whole lot of communities that have a permanent curfew. I suppose that they have a few.
They tend to be small towns, where you have, where one cop can really cover the whole town. You'll see them there. But as you grow, it's pretty hard to administer.
Well, no longer do we get at 10 o'clock a little slide that comes up on the news right before the news starts on the local TV stations. It's 10 o'clock. Do you know where your children are?
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a while.
It's been a long time. What are your thoughts about the ShotSpotter technology? I have to be careful when I say that, but the ShotSpotter technology. I've heard about that in other communities. I think Kansas City might even have that. I don't know. Many places do.
I know a lot of, once you reach a certain size, you can sort of afford it, I think, but it's really expensive. There are some federal programs that'll pay for the installation, so we're looking at that. But at the same time, it's expensive to even carry it through. So if we can get maybe a grant to pay for a pilot, it might be worth doing because that tech. I was pretty dubious at first, but the more I learn about it, the more I'm becoming intrigued by it. If we can get someone else to pay for the intro cost, maybe it's worth trying.
And what that does is basically, as I understand it, it registers where gunshots are fired and kind of gives you an idea, a map of where these are occurring.
That's right, and the tech is amazing. I've seen it work. I pulled up Oakland live at a conference I was at, and while I was looking at the screen, two guns were being fired. One was an automatic, one was a handgun. And it knew the difference, and it knew exactly where, and it dispatched the officers. And so it skipped the whole 911 delay, right? We didn't rely on someone calling 911, didn't rely on getting dispatched, and then we start. So their officers were already on scene before they got the first call of 911, and that's powerful. So
that is.
That's the reason it's something worth talking about, but it is frankly, obscenely expensive.
And again, it is estimated in the report, the most recent cost estimate is $500,000, $500,000 for 1 year of service. That would be installing $300,000 and then $200,000 per year for the license to use it. That seems like a pretty expensive license.
Yeah. Yeah. If at that, you just pass it by. It's too expensive. Yeah. But if you can get a grant to cover it, maybe you try it for a year and see if it makes any difference.
One of the other things I think that the city council did on Monday, that was establishing a integrated electric resource and master plan task force. What are your thoughts about how accurate we have been and can be in predicting electricity needs? And I think this is even expands to water usage or water needs in the future.
You know, that's some of the toughest guesstimates to make, especially as you want to estimate what you're going to need for energy in 20 years. There's a lot of change in that 20 years. It used to be pretty pretty solid because tech didn't change much. But if you think of what we've experienced in the last 10 years, first we went a big revolution to compact fluorescent bulbs, which use a lot less power than old light bulbs. Then we've all now adopted LEDs. So another giant reduction in use. So just the same amount of light bulbs, we're using less power. And even though the city's growing, it's stayed pretty stable, the amount of energy we need. So those are the things that weren't foreseen by the consultants we hired, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, that really is the basis of the staff's request to reboot that. Let's put that on the side and relook at the future and start this process over.
If the people who had been hired before, like you said, had been able to predict more accurately, would that have saved you a whole lot of headaches a few years ago?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No one's had more headaches about this whole thing than the staff, let me tell you, and me. So it's, if we could see the future more clearly, we would love to be able to.
Anything else that's on your mind today? I don't know what, if anything you can say. I know that just a few days ago you were talking about with the Columbia Police Officers Association, their lawsuit against the city for open records concerns there. I don't know what or you can or want to say in regard to that issue.
Well, I think the testimony is open record, if I'm not mistaken.
So, and it's been in the media.
Yeah. So, we have a disagreement about a fairly small point in the law. If it's a labor negotiation, then it's private is what the law says. So I made that commitment to the officers. They spoke to me with that understanding. So I'm keeping it private. If the judge disagrees, then I'll salute and do it his way. But right now we believe we're following the law.
And what it's about, the underlying question about that is you were what, wanting to understand feelings of police officers about their department?
That's right. It was all about morale. I wanted to confirm or not the items I was hearing from CPOA. And they did, funny enough, at the end of the day, too, is we found the same result. So we then, through the labor negotiation process, changed the shift. So, that's interesting, too.
Caller, caller lit up that, but dropped off before we had a chance to get to that call. I'll ask again, anything else we haven't covered? I mean, I'd like covering a whole lot of topics, as you understand, and we've just covered a whole lot of topics.
Boy, today I think I might be out of topics.
anything else then going forward? I mean, springtime, what's on your to-do list or what's on your list of things that we're facing you over the next week or two?
Well, this is budget season. We're already neck deep in predicting our expenditures 2 years from now, which is our great challenge in the budget. And our focus is really going to be trying to find a way to give some kind of a raise to employees. It's been a couple of years now of belt tightening, and you can't sustain that for much longer.
Any word on the revenue predictions?
Looks bad. Sales tax is now not just growing slowly. It's actually less money. So we're losing money in sales tax. Less is coming in so far this year than we received last year.
How do you make that up?
There's only two ways to balance the budget. You either have to have
cut cost,
right?
So increase revenue.
Increase revenue or cut expenses.
And how do you increase revenue? Maybe everybody could shop more for one thing, or you'd have to look at a different way of raising revenue.
Shop local. Right.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
Thank you.